Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tune in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hey everybody, it's Nikki Nellis. Thank you for tuning in to Industry Night with Beauty and the Beast. I'm in the gorgeous Line Hotel. So if you're here today, you can just walk down and see me and check out what we're doing. We've got a lot of gorgeous food and drinks in studio. And while this is Foodie and the Beast, and some of you may know myself and my co-host David Nellis, my husband, from our Foodie and the Beast show, which has been running for 10 years on a separate station, today I've kicked the beast out of the studio and brought in my other David, David Hagedorn. Many of you know him as the restaurant critic for Bethesda and Arlington magazines. He also is a bon vivant around town and writes for lots of other publications. He has a very famous byline and is a food authority. So, David, thank you so much for joining us on air today.
Thank you for picking me up in the lobby.
I know. I love to pick you up in the lobby. And that's a true story, actually. So we're really doing an interesting show today. And one of the reasons why I picked David Hagedorn up in the lobby is because there is this fabulous magazine called Sous Vide, and David happens to be one of the writers for it, and he has written some really pretty beautiful articles in there. And for those of you who dine out frequently, chances are you've had something that's been cooked by the sous vide process. And there is a company called Cuisine Solutions, and they are the people behind this. They have pioneered, perfected, and actually popularized this way of cooking. And chefs that you know, like the late Michel Richard, Thomas Keller, the late Charlie Trotter, Daniel Boulud, so many chefs around town are now incorporating sous vide cooking into their menus. And you may be actually finding it in the freezer section of your grocery store. So I'm very fascinated by the process, and not just how sous vide is done, but how it winds up being done in a cooking kitchen and then actually could wind up on your plate at home. So in with us today from Cuisine Solutions is Chef Delian DiPietro.
Yes.
Did I say it right?
Delian or Del.
No, okay.
Either is fine.
I'm calling you Chef Del. Hi, Chef Del. Thank you so much for joining us today. And also with us is chef consultant AJ Schaller. So I'm going to ask both of you to tell us both of your backgrounds just a little bit, because you both have really incredible resumes. Chef Del, let's start with you.
Okay. So I've been cooking professionally for a little over 14 years now. I started actually really seeing sous vide probably about 10, 11 years ago when I was working in New Haven, Connecticut at a place called Union League Cafe. That was for a French master chef. Other notables along the way, Dan Barber at Blue Hill, DC.
Yeah, just start name dropping. Yeah. Name drop. Go ahead, let's do it.
DC, Jose Andreas, and I've been at Cuisine for about a little over 3 years now. So wide variety. I mean, I've worked up and down the East Coast. I just had a lot of fun. I left home at 17 and I was like, I'm just going to go work for whoever I can get my foot in the door and work for the best.
Well, so, but what made you decide to leave a restaurant kitchen and go to this kind of kitchen?
A few different things were going on in my life. I had a beautiful daughter who was about 1 year old, and I was still living the kitchen life, so I'd be leaving bright and early while she was asleep, and then I'd be coming home in the twilight hours when she was already asleep, so I felt like I was missing out on that. But the real thing that drew me to Cuisine Solutions is I feel like I'm at a chef's grad school. Mm-hmm. I am surrounded by people who are passionate about food, who are disciplined in their approach, who are driven to continuously challenge themselves to find something new and make something better. And if you have people that are coming in and doing that every day, it's kind of amazing. It's a really great place to be, and it's almost like you're in this free exchange of ideas of how can you make something new, how can you make something better, how can we continue to improve ourselves. And then there's the added bonus of all these chefs who, you know, I dreamed about meeting one day, just happened to be walking in the front door every other day to be like, hey, can you help us with this? Can you help us figure out another solution for what we're doing?
Well, I want to follow up on that, but I want to introduce Chef AJ Schaller. So AJ, tell us, please, about a little bit about your background and how you wound up with this organization.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Nikki. So I was aware of Cuisine Solutions for quite a while. I come from restaurants as well, like Dell. I went to the Culinary Institute of America and have been cooking for like 16 or 17 years. So it's been pretty much my whole life. But when I finished school, and while actually I was on my internship, I worked for Daniel Boulud. And that grew into over a decade-long relationship. So I started as a cook and then left as culinary manager. So I was doing everything from helping open restaurants, write cookbooks. And then I met Bruno Gousseau while I was working for Daniel. He trained all of our staff how to cook sous vide in, you know, the early 2000s and kind of kept in contact. And that's how I ended up gradually working at Cuisine Solutions in Crea.
Well, so Bruno is the man, the scientist behind this whole process. Can you tell us a little bit about his background and his history and how he became the man behind sous vide?
Certainly, yeah. So Bruno founded Crea, which is the Culinary Research and Education Academy, in 1991 in France. He was working with Chef Robuchon, actually. And he started doing experimenting on sous vide cooking while he was working as a scientist in the laboratory. And one of the first things that he did to collaborate with the chef was to see how he could take a piece of beef that typically is not super tender and employ the sous vide method in his lab to get it like really nice and juicy and beautiful, and could use it as a roast beef on a buffet, something like this. And he had the equipment in his lab, right? Like he had the jacuzzi baths or circulators as you have it. But back then, you know, he was just using it for like microbiological testing and then applied food to it. So he really applied like the precise science to cooking, you know, proteins or really anything sous vide, collaborated with chefs along the way. And Crea grew into, you know, a global leader in training people how to cook sous vide. And
well, I feel like we need to back up a little bit. So, David, why don't you, because I know you know a lot about this topic, what is sous vide for the uninitiated? What does that mean?
Well, sous vide means under pressure or in a vacuum, and you're basically...
Jack, can we get a little music on that? Can you put a little under pressure?
Play that?
Please? Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Taking food and putting it in a vacuum-sealed bag, and then you use a circulator, which is kind of a rod that's set into a pot of water, a basin of water, and will heat the water to whatever temperature you set it at. And you can cook that food product in the water bath for long periods of time. And the food in the bag, because it's under a vacuum, will cook to the temperature that you set it at and not above. So
because it's in a constant swirling motion?
The pressures have equalized in both in the outside and the inside. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
And water being the best transfer of heat as well.
Right.
So it's very precise.
Okay. So he was originally thinking about doing this for meats, proteins?
Correct. Yes.
Why? Because if you think about it, like for people who don't cook, or who don't understand the process of sous vide, why not just throw it into boiling water? I mean, what's the difference?
Well, when you have the product in the pouch, like we do at Cuisine Solutions or any of the chefs locally cook sous vide, you have very minimal loss. You have precise cooking. There's no loss of vapor, right, in the cooking. Like nothing's leaching into the water. It's all staying in the pouch. And it's really like maximum flavor.
When you say loss, you mean like shrinkage?
Correct, yeah.
Or
right.
Evaporation. There's
exactly.
No evaporation.
Okay. So when you're talking about doing sous vide cooking, initially it was for proteins, but you guys have applied it to everything, mm-hmm. right? And are you both of you in the lab just sort of playing with things? Like how does each creation come up?
So there's actually a lot of different ways that product is come into fruition. Actually, one of the ones I brought you guys today with the coconut chia oatmeal was developed by our chef Olivier for his wife who was pregnant. Yes,
chia
exactly.
Oatmeal.
That
okay.
one. So she was craving like high protein and like high nutritious items, and they just somehow started putting these items together. I don't know if it was just at their house or how it ended up, but then lo and behold, it comes into a research and development meeting like, oh, what else can we do with oatmeal? What are there other applications? And then it just kind of went from there. There's multiple ways. Sometimes we'll have chefs or clients that come and ask us. Sometimes it's just like earlier today, we did our Monday innovation tasting. It's just what we made up. We were just thinking of, this would be fun. Oh, could we do this? And there's never a set criterion what it needs to be. It's what you feel passionate or what you think could be really a great thing that could be brought to clients or a great thing that we could make.
Well, so, but I feel like we still need to back up. So when Bruno was creating this process and he started just with proteins, how did it evolve to where we are today? How did it go from A to Z?
I think that the availability for chefs to use it in their kitchens really opened the floodgates for creativity.
Was that his idea?
Yes.
Was he like, this needs to be in the kitchens?
Bruno will say he's like a scientist for the chefs, right? So he wants to spread the knowledge so that when people replicate it in their own institutions or restaurants or even at home, they have the fundamentals on how to treat each different product. So the way that we would treat beef versus fish versus vegetables, it's all different based on scientific fundamentals that he'll share with them. And then once the chefs learn these like fundamentals or notes, right? It's like a symphony. They can put together their own recipes and build upon that.
Mm-hmm. And so as it grew, how did you get in touch with different chefs? How did that start? Who was the first person he brought in that was like, yes, I get this. I want this in my kitchen.
His first collaborator was, of course, Chef Robuchon.
Right.
But he works all over the
world. But he was
world.
A collaborator. Did Chef Robuchon say, I want this in my kitchen after he tried it? Like,
right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So they were friends, and they built Crea together to, you know, continue, like, experimenting on the technique and, you know, spread the word globally. And he's been all around the world, just meeting chefs through this, like, amazing network that they have with each other. Being introduced as like the authority and then keeping in contact with them. So he still works with Chef Keller, Chef Balud, Anne-Sophie Peake, Yannick Galeno very closely. So it's just an ongoing relationship.
And do they now come to you all with their ideas of what they want? How does what they want get executed?
Yeah, sometimes if they want to achieve something that they aren't able to sort of like coordinate on their own in their own test kitchens or in their own time, they'll turn to Crea's opportunity to help.
I think most of the top chefs in the world have come through Bruno's lab.
Yeah,
Really the big proponents of sous vide have all come to Cuisine Solutions at some point
this knowledge. I'm sorry. I'd actually say if you look at the intro of Thomas Keller's book, Under Pressure, you'll actually see our old letterhead in there. And there's actually a letter from Dr. Grusseau being like, hey, this is what we do. This is how we've done it. And this is why sous vide is safe and interesting. And I think that was also kind of like what AJ said. It was part of that revolution of where this became almost something every chef wanted to do or had to learn if they really wanted to excel into the Michelin star level.
Well, is it because of lack of, like, why does that apply to higher-end chefs? You think that it would be a concept for everybody. David?
Well, sous vide cooking really cuts down on waste, for example.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
And it's so precise that you're really not throwing out product. I mean, probably the best example to use now, because it's so popular kind of in mainstream cooking and home cooking, is the sous vide steak, where you put the steak in the pouch and vacuum seal it and cook it to between 125 and 130 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And you can put a little sprig of rosemary in there, a little bit of garlic. It doesn't take much because of
Or like Michael Mina put butter in there.
Well,
isn't that what Michael Mina
Michael
does?
Michael Mina basically used butter instead of water as the poaching medium. But
that's the part I don't understand. For Michael Mina, if the butter's not in the bag, who cares if the butter's on the outside?
Well, you didn't really need a bag because the density of the butter kind of acted, was not going to transfer into the steak, so you can put the steak directly into the butter.
Oh, okay.
And he was using it as more of a poaching technique.
Right.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds more like poaching.
That's much more of what they were doing. So,
that's not sous vide.
It's not sous vide, but it is kind of based on the same
style.
Principle, but it's not sous vide.
It's like method Chapinois, right? In that style.
Well, because water and butter have different densities, they just the cooking process is different. So the proteins are denatured in a different way than when you put a steak, suspend a steak in butter than you do if you put it in water and you're basically boiling it.
Okay. So now, but if you're sous-viding a steak classic style in the bag, you know, what next? So you come out and you have this piece of meat that's cooked the whole way through the same way. So
right.
if you want it medium rare, it's medium rare straight through.
Edge to edge.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do? Sear it
and
afterwards?
Sear it afterwards.
Give it that crust. Mm-hmm.
Most things cooked sous vide have to be finished in a pan.
Yeah, a la minute. Typically what you'll do is, depending on the product, actually a lot of our products, what we do is we actually sear before it goes in because the Maillard reaction really enhances the flavors, the natural flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And so inside the pouch, what happens is rather than us losing all that flavor as it cooks, it stays in there and it really intensifies and amplifies all the natural flavors. So then when the cooking process is done, because everything kind of cooks at different temperatures and everything cooks
so
at different
So you need different
rates.
Baths for each thing, right?
Yep. We okay. have a, yeah, for example, we have about 200 products in our SKU and each one of them has a different cooking curve.
Okay.
So,
and just before you continue on that, how do you come up with, how much playing do you have to do to come up with the temperature for each thing?
A lot. Actually, AJ's engineered tons of temperatures for different clients. I mean, she can definitely go into depth, but I mean, just through trial and error alone, that's not enough because you have to start recording everything. So I'll let her take it.
I'm really curious on the process.
Sure. By rule of thumb, we typically cook at lower temperatures than you would normally, right? So if I'm grilling something or if I'm cooking something in a convection oven or even just searing in a pan, the ambient temperature, whether it be on the surface or inside of the oven itself, the air is like 350, 400, 500 degrees. But what you're doing with sous vide is you're not cooking above the temperature than what you want the core to be.
Okay.
And
so it's all about the middle.
Yes. So what we would say is like typically it's a low temperature for a long time, but it's not just a low temperature. It's a precise temperature because we know exactly what temperature is medium rare, medium, medium well. If it's fish or really anything that we cook, we consider first, you know, food safety. Of course, it's going to be a safe temperature, but also what's the best texture and what's the best method. So the idea of even cooking vegetables at these low temperatures takes a lot longer, right? Because we're not actually boiling it. When you boil something, it is just like all the flavors coming off in the water.
Right.
It can get mushy if you don't watch it carefully. Like you lose that sort of like al dente.
Well, you also lose. You got to be really precise when you're boiling something, right? Mm-hmm. Like you got to pull it out and throw it in cold water as soon as possible.
Exactly. So because we're cooking at lower temperatures, like for vegetables, you'd cook it for a longer time because you need that time to kind of like break down the starch and all of these things. But you also have the chance, and you might have seen this with the 72-hour short rib that we sent, but if you want to cook something that typically you would braise or stew, like short rib, we can cook it at this low temperature, simple seasoning, and it's not just a
when
matter
you say,
of temperature, but
I just want to be clear, though. When you say simple seasoning, because one of the things I was surprised, I mean, full disclosure, I got sent an entire freezer full of products to try, which was pretty fabulous and totally unexpected. So thank you very much.
Gold
rush. Pleasure.
I know,
our
I know. Pleasure. I was like, dinner tonight, tomorrow night, and every night this week. I was surprised at some of the products that were sent. And we, as I said, we did the 72-hour short rib last night.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was interesting, though, is that I followed the directions. But that was seared beforehand, and there was a sauce inside.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part I wasn't expecting. Like, I knew that you could sort of season it, but I wasn't expecting it to create a sauce inside. I thought I was going to have to do something to it. Do you know, I mean, just as the uninitiated, I didn't know. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Part of the beauty is actually when we're talking about that waste, the natural juices stay in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually creating its own sauce rather than something going away or having to reproduce something or add more flavors. All the natural jus that is in that bag is enhanced and it becomes these like pungent, robust, amazing,
intense. Super intense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about simple seasoning, typically it's less than you would put on a normal braise or grill, right? So imagine you're a chef, you've got a burger patty, you're just like throwing on the salt and pepper, throwing it on the charbroil grill, and a lot of that seasoning is like coming off on the equipment, like coming off on the grill, kind of like escaping with the juices that are coming out of the burger. So if you think about it that way, we actually put less of a percentage of seasoning in the pouch because it's so precise. Like, we do it by weight, that you have the meat seasoned all the way through or whatever you're cooking, and it, the juices that naturally, like, you know, come in, you know, come out of the meat, and then they're soaked back up, and it's just kind of like this great transfer of flavor throughout the core of the product.
Yeah, if you remember high school biology for osmosis.
Right.
No, I don't remember high school biology at all.
Let's talk about the 72-hour short rib. So it's cooked in the water bath for 72 hours, and what's the temperature that... What's the temperature that you set the water at?
We go medium rare. Mm. So, like, you can get it to the point where the core is what we'd consider a medium rare temperature, which would be perfectly acceptable for, like, a New York strip steak, right? Mm-hmm. But short rib has a lot of collagen and gelatin, and it takes time for that to break down. So that's why it's called the 72-hour short rib, because it's not just a function of the temperature and core. It's the amount of time that you give something, like, a tougher cut of meat. So that's what's really cool, is because most people are used to seeing short ribs braised kind of just like pull apart, super soft. But one of the things that we can achieve by keeping it at that low temperature for a long time is it looks medium rare and core, but it eats like a really tender braised piece of meat.
Right, which is people are shocked when they have it for the first time because it's red all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Which is
braised
odd.
Meat is not.
Right, yeah. Usually it's cooked.
I mean, it is braised, but it doesn't look braised.
Right.
The texture.
Yeah. All of our products, like, we're cooking lower than it would be to lose the water holding capacity of the food, right? So, like, if you boil that piece of meat, it's just going to be dry. You can put as much sauce on it as you want, but right. it's just not the same.
So. Well, it's sort of taking slow and low and, you know, steroiding it up, right? Do you know what I mean? So, like, when I cook a brisket... I throw it in the oven at 250 and keep it there, you know, in a ton of liquid mm-hmm. all day. Mm-hmm. But this is condensing that, obviously, and I'm not losing, even though there's tons of liquid in there, the flavor of the meat is leaching into the liquid. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you guys are cooking it sous vide, it's all sort of all staying in place, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't have to inject it with anything in order to get that flavor throughout.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well,
very precise.
So when playing with other, once moving away from the proteins, at what point did the proteins, like, did you guys move away from just working with proteins and opening it up to other things, to the vegetables, to the beans, to desserts? I mean, we have drinks here in studio. We have all the oatmeal. Like, why apply it to all of it?
Realistically, we think it's a very safe way to cook, and also it's a very precise. So the textures that are created in sous vide can't be mimicked elsewhere. So when you talk about the precision in cooking and the water holding capacity, as AJ touched on, when we're able to control in the vacuum is we're able to give very, very specific textures and very consistent textures to food that you would think is cooked a la minute in a restaurant. And that's something that has really spurred on Cuisine Solutions because we get a lot of need for that. I mean, we service 22,000 restaurants and hotels worldwide, you know, the top of the airlines, the top of the cruise ships. We're in the first class cabins, essentially.
Well, I mean, we haven't really... discuss that part yet. So not only do you create these concepts, but you sell them. So you train chefs and they can do it in their own kitchens, mm-hmm. or you make it, mm-hmm. right? So now you can continue. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think we've explained to people that these products are actually available for retail.
Yeah, the big joke we always have is you probably ate our food and didn't know.
Right,
right.
Right.
Well, for instance, the 72-hour short rib at Centrale, was that coming from you, or
was
Michelle making it there,
or is it I'll never tell?
I think it's going to be an I'll never tell.
Yeah, but we do have, you know, retail outlets and restaurants that we supply to, or have taught. So they kind of choose one or the other. But when people purchase the products from Cuisine Solutions, it's kind of like giving them a product that they can build upon, like a canvas, and we like to say, like, it's customizable for whatever you'd like to do, and it's really helpful for operations that are just doing sort of a pickup step, like a quick sear or reheat, because we've already done the bulk of the cooking for them. They just need to customize it however they'd like for their menu.
So on an airline, how does that work? Are they're purchasing the finished product from you, and then are they finishing it in the kitchen on the ground, or is it being, and then then it gets baked on the plane.
Typically on the ground, I do know that there are some airlines that have been toying with the idea of putting ovens like for specific uses. The big thing that we've been seeing a lot of is kind of the grab and go or just menus a la carte. So that means they have to have heating equipment on a lot of the flights. It really just kind of depends. Typically, like with the, like I said, we service typically the first class cabins, business class, and that's why you'll see something a little smaller.
So forget coach. You're not getting sous vide anything in coach.
So when you, so give an example of something that would be served in first class.
I know that we make, actually very similar to the 72-hour short rib, we actually make a product that's specifically for one of our clients, and that is for the first class cabin. There's also a grilled tenderloin that we make for our first class cabin, and again, it's the whole idea of that luxury and the precision.
So with the tenderloin, is that a whole tenderloin you're doing, or are you doing the little? Are you doing fillets?
For the airlines, we're just doing fillet.
So will you sear that first and then sous vide it? Okay, so the sear and sous vide. So really, all they really have to do, because they don't on the airlines, even in first class, they don't really care that much about the sear. They're going to just warm it up and serve it, right? Wouldn't that be accurate?
And how do they do that?
Again, it would depend on the airline. I wouldn't be able to answer specifics on that.
And so you work with a bunch of airlines. And then I know you do something really... You do one of the products for Starbucks, right?
Yes.
The bites.
Yep,
breakfast.
The egg bites. Yeah. We're actually going to be launching our new flavor tomorrow, June 5th.
Okay, what is it? I mean, can you tell us? I mean, you can tell us.
So it's going to be our chicken chorizo tortilla.
Okay.
So it's going to be actually a little more of on the savory end. So it's going to have a lot of fresh spices, tomatoes, cilantro, and then it's going to have these really cool little tortillas that are going to get crispy on top.
Okay, well, let's back up a little bit for...
These bites, they're absolutely
what are they
delicious.
Called? They're called egg bites?
Sous vide egg bites.
Sous vide egg bites. And they're available at Starbucks, and they're what are they?
I think they come three to an order.
Two
an order.
And are they like little frittatas?
In a way, but there's no... There's no
carbs.
Crust.
Right.
It's
crustless
just protein.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got either egg white or whole egg. And currently it's Gruyere and bacon or peppers with the egg whites. So it's just like the coolest little like quiche looking, you know, three bite, you know, item that is warm. It doesn't get your hands greasy. You can eat it. It comes in, you know, a pouch that, or not a pouch, but just like a tray that you can just eat it on the go. So it's kind of like eating a breakfast sandwich, but without guilt.
The bread. I'm completely with you.
They're really delicious, and it's hard to as someone who tries to eat a low carb diet, it's hard to go to an airport and find something fast and low carb
without bread. And that's not a bar. You know what I mean?
They're really delicious. So they arrive to the outlets of the airport in frozen cryovac, the cryovac frozen, and then they just pop them in a special oven and bake them. And
it's a
really
great,
kind of fluffy and custardy, and they're delicious.
I mean, it's a great example of like finishing our products in store, because you know, everything that we sell is like fully cooked and pasteurized, and on the receiving end, all you have to do is reheat and serve, and it's, you know, perfect every time.
Well, you bring up a really good point, because we have to take a break in just a couple minutes. What about the safety part of sous vide cooking? Is there a concern that do people have to worry about? I mean, when it's coming, when it's already done for them, not the home cook, because we'll get into that in the next half of the show. But is there any safety concern at all when it comes to sous vide cooking?
Not the way we do it,
okay.
For sure.
I mean, we've proven that our way is not only safe, but it's actually a lot of times better.
Okay, how have you proven that? In what capacity?
Actually, Dr. Bruno Grosso actually went up to New York when New York, probably was it 10 years, 12 years ago, when New York was challenging the idea of restaurants doing sous vide. They actually put a kibosh on it. They're like, no one else is doing this. And then Bruno ended up going there and arguing the case and could prove that the levels of bacteria and pathogens, foodborne pathogens, were not present when it was done properly.
Okay.
So
were people just doing it improperly?
It was partially a lack of knowledge on all ends, I think it was. Because if you knew how to do it properly and you'd been trained by Bruno, which many chefs in New York have been, there wasn't an issue. But the health department was unaware of it or unsure of it or...
Just not educated.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to speak for specifics on their part, but... it was just this new thing, and everyone was like, whoa, hold on.
Right.
What's going on?
Well, because, I mean, listen, restaurants have to meet certain health codes, and if they're cooking in a new way, the you know, the health codes need to be up to date in order to make sure there's no violations of it.
Yeah, we deal with that a lot at CREA, actually. Like, we're working with jurisdictions, like, all across the nation all the time. But I think it's safe to say that in a manufacturing setting, because the product never leaves the pouch, right? So it goes in raw, gets cooked, it's pasteurized. It arrives to you either fresh or frozen. But the fact that it never is coming out of the pouch before it gets delivered is really an amazing safety measure, because it's not reopened to any sort of contamination before it gets shipped out. So that alone is, like, really amazing. And the way that we, you know, chill it and cook it and all of the safety points that are in place and the amazing, like, quality assurance team that we have, super safe.
But that was the issue with in New York, was that the things that you're doing in your facility, the restaurant chefs were doing in their own kitchens, and a number of them weren't as educated in the process as they maybe should have been. And the cooling down, for instance, is a really big deal. Once the food is cooked, you have to chill it in a certain way quickly and, you know, store it properly. So there were issues, and we'll get into that in the next half of the show about applying it to home cooking. I mean, there are things you need to know that they've perfected at Cuisine Solutions that home cooks have to be aware of.
Excellent. All right. Well, on that note, we are going to take a quick break. This is Nikki Nellis and David Hagedorn. He's my beast today on Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast. We are talking about sous vide cooking, and maybe you can do it at home. We'll be back in just a sec.
And the break song today by a producer named Morris. Find him on soundcloud.com/pmorris. We'll be right back.
Everybody, it's Nikki Nellis, Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast in the gorgeous Line Hotel. We are in the studio right downstairs, and today I have a special guest with me as my co-host. I have David Hagedorn, who many of you know. He is a well-known DC writer, and I have two guests in with me. We have been talking about sous vide cooking thanks to all this science from Cuisine Solutions, and with me today I have Chef Del Di Pietro, right?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Yep. I'm always like congratulating myself when I say somebody's name correctly. And chef consultant AJ Schaller, who is also with us today. And we're talking about the whole process of sous vide cooking. Cuisine Solutions has sort of pioneered this concept. And there are many of you are eating out in restaurants and may even be eating at home and eating a product that has been processed, put through the sous vide process. So we have a variety of products, beautiful products in studio. Why don't you both tell us, and a cocktail as well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what we have in front of us, please?
Okay. So we actually based these choices off of some of the items that we sent you. We wanted to really give you a hands-on experience. So the first thing I'll bring to your attention is called TPT. This is actually a really classic Greek or Turkish spread. So it's our fire-roasted red peppers, which I then lightly seasoned with a little bit of thyme and rosemary, and then folded in some feta. So it's really meant to just be a finger food, just kind of like warm summer day. I didn't know if we were actually going to get the rain today. I lucked out.
It's beautiful.
I went for light and summery.
Okay.
And we've just got a little pita to serve that
with. Okay, so but what...
So the fire roasted red peppers.
Right.
Are
I was
ours.
Like, what part of this is cooked via sous vide?
So the fire roasted red pepper sauce. So this is actually a sauce that we. And AJ, actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we actually worked with Thomas Keller on this one many, many moons ago. So this was actually one of the products that we make. So this is also available online at mycuisinesolutions.com. So if you want to go and buy it yourself, you're more than welcome to. For us, we're just kind of giving you some applications just because we wanted to, you know, for us, the sky's the limit to all that creativity.
Right.
So it's not just a matter of the food being in a bag or, you know, any of this. We don't want to take away creativity. We want to inspire more of it. We just want to help do the bulk labor, so
to speak. But I think that's really interesting because some of the products you did send me, you know, I was like, what am I supposed to do with, I mean, you know, like a big bag of
fire roasted pepper sauce.
I was like, pasta as a sauce on the side. Yeah. What am I, you know, like, I don't think people who don't cook normally think, okay, what can I do with it? They think I'm just supposed to use it. So seeing this, I mean, it gives me all these great ideas.
So you want another cool part?
Yes, tell me.
All right, so what I actually did is I strained off our sauce so I could just have the chunks of the peppers, and then I made the harissa yogurt using our fire-roasted red peppers on the octopus.
Oh.
So you can get multiple uses out of the same product.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do a vinaigrette, say, or, you know, whatever you like to do. So that leads us into the next one. So this is going to be our octopus, which I've sliced into our carpaccio.
Which is beautiful.
A little bit of cucumber pearls, some fresh pomegranates, fennel, little Aleppo chilies. And then, like I said, I used the fire-roasted red pepper sauce to make a harissa yogurt. So I added a little more heat, a little more Aleppo.
More heat to it.
Little caraway.
I mean, to me, nothing. It feels like octopus was made to be sous vide. You know, so many people try to poach it. They overcook it. I mean, it just seems to me that, like, octopus was actually made to be cooked this way.
It excels.
You
it
know?
Actually excels in that environment.
So now, did you grill it afterwards, or did you just sous vide it and called it a day?
Just sous vide it, called it a day, and then I just sliced it really thin. This product grills amazingly well. You can throw it on a plancha. You can throw it on, a charcoal grill. Mm. It takes the smoke. And I'm guessing right now you were waiting to see if it was going to be chewy or not.
Butter.
Yeah.
It's delicious. It's here, did you try some? It's absolutely delicious. No, it's not chewy at all.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't mind a little chew in my we've all had bad octopus before. No, it's really soft, and you really get the flavor. You know, like it's got
very
a beautiful
clean.
Ocean flavor. It's really lovely.
So again, I mean, kind of going back to the short rib, that short rib's just salt and black pepper. The octopus, same deal. Like, we keep it super, super simple. We don't want to take away.
God, but it's got so much flavor. It's
all
really
natural flavor.
Fascinating.
Actually, the really cool part about that is that's actually artisanally caught. So what they used to do is in Greece and Rome, they used to lower these large amphoras down into the water, and the octopus would naturally crawl into it. And then what they do is pull up the amphoras and throw vinegar into the water. The octopus reacts to the vinegar, and then he climbs out, and then they just pull it. So a gentleman in Spain actually figured out how
to do that.
That
sounds so violent. My God.
Never eat octopus again.
They're super smart. They're hard to catch.
They're super smart. They are. It's true. We shouldn't really be eating them. But yes, but they're not so smart that they don't get caught. Anyway, go ahead.
I mean, fish swim in schools, I'm just saying.
Yes, it's all true.
So what they actually do is they've modernized this technique, and that's actually what we're getting. So this is actually an artisanal caught octopus. So.
Oh, fascinating. Okay, and then what do we have in the jars?
So this is a grab-and-go concept. So what we have layered is we actually have a ponzu vinaigrette, and then our sliced beef. This actually comes in sliced. So if you kind of think about it, safety, we actually pre-slice it. It's a patented process that we've developed. So,
but you slice it super, 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 super thin.
2 millimeter.
Right? It's like spiraled ham, but like to the nth degree.
Yeah, this is the slice is literally
right?
2 millimeters. Mm-hmm. And
because when I first did that, what cut of meat is that?
That's the sirloin. So
the sirloin,
top sirloin cut.
Okay, so when I first did the sirloin, I was like, is this just so like soft and unbelievable that it's just falling apart and these are the natural layers? But then I read the information. I was like, no, okay.
So it's a mason jar. It's a pint-sized mason jar.
Your favorite.
Yep. With the meat and red onions and arugula and sauce.
Yep, and so the whole idea is that you can just have this refrigerated, so maybe you're headed into work or whatever you do, and then you'll build these, and then just when you get there, give it a shake, and you incorporate everything into a nice little salad.
I also like it as an past hors d'oeuvre for mm-hmm. a party. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. this is a nice little, put little two chopsticks ones, yeah. in there. Mm-hmm. It's a great little party item. Okay.
Very, very smart.
Yes, it's beautiful, and I love it.
So the last one we already kind of touched on is our coconut chia oatmeal. So oats, chia, coconut milk from Thailand. We actually mm-hmm. have a plant in Thailand, and the coconut milk facility is about 10 miles down the road. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the best coconut milks you can get, and it's super fresh. And then I've just done a little homemade blackberry compote, some fresh blackberries on top, and then some crunchy chocolate pearls.
I'm going to ask this question not to be negative, but why would you sous vide oatmeal?
Okay, so legumes and grains in general in the sous vide process are 100 times better. I don't know if you've ever just tried to throw in a pot of beans or anything, and then you come back, lentils, you name it. You come back 15 minutes later, the bottom's scorched, the top has no air, you have these little chalky pieces, mm-hmm. and then somewhere in the middle you have like maybe 2 spoonfuls of good legumes. They respond in the sous vide so precisely that you can line up the first one in the bag and the last one in the bag and every single other one, and you'll have this beautiful al dente texture.
Okay.
So it's just like, you can't
You're just
get
cooking
more.
It in its entirety.
Yeah. You can't okay. get more precise.
So, and what goes in the bag with the oats?
So, the oats, the chia, the coconut, a little bit of sugar, mm-hmm. and I just believe a tiny dash of salt. That's it.
Yeah.
And then, at what temperature?
For oats and the chia, they actually will do a two-step on this one. So, what we're looking for is hydrolysis, which is going to be a higher temperature range. But I can't really give any secrets away.
Okay.
I see what you're doing.
David's like, I'm going to make this at home.
So, and then how do you reheat it?
This one I didn't. Mm-hmm. Actually, this one I love cold. It's kind of like the most refreshing rice pudding you'll ever have.
Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
She's like, I like it for dessert. I like it for breakfast.
But you can reheat it for breakfast. I mean, yes. You can make oatmeal and then add the pouch.
If you'd like, you can just reheat it stovetop like you would mm-hmm. a normal oatmeal. But again, in this case, because it's pasteurized and it's ready to use, all you have to do is get it hot to your liking. You don't have to worry about it boiling.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever had scorching oatmeal boil into your face, but it's really not pleasant.
It's like the best overnight oats you've ever had.
Right, which is such a hot thing right now.
Definitely.
And what about the cocktail?
The cocktail is actually a rhubarb cocktail that we have featured in our issue of Sous Vide Magazine currently. And the rhubarb is infused sous vide with Saint Germain liquor, which is elderflower liqueur. Mm-hmm. And there's also a little bit of just extract of the rhubarb peel and the trim itself, combined with a little bit of fresh lemon juice and champagne to top it off. So a nice, refreshing cocktail for the summertime for sure.
So you poured in the fresh champagne, like you popped the champagne here, but the rest of it came in a little pouch?
I sous vide it, yes.
You just sous vide mm-hmm. the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really amazing. It's a delicious
rhubarb.
Rhubarb
is a really great example for sous vide the positive method of cooking, because remember that conversation we had that rhubarb doesn't have a flavor?
Yes.
And I was the proponent of that idea.
Right.
And cooking it sous vide, really, the flavor of rhubarb really does come through because you're not losing, it's not going anywhere. Yeah. It's really being concentrated in that pouch.
I didn't cheat and add a strawberry. It's just rhubarb.
Well, I mean,
you can taste rhubarb. Like I can, my point was that often
you can't
have
identify
things that
it.
Have rhubarb in it. And if you didn't know there was rhubarb in it, you wouldn't be able to identify it.
You would think it was celery that's been colored.
And that's one of the great things about cocktails with sous vide, because you can do these really precise infusions with something that you might leave on the counter for a week or more. Like if you think about, I don't know, limoncello or tonic water, things like that, that you just kind of like hang out until it tasted correct. You could do it sous vide at a low enough temperature that you're not losing the real flavor of the product itself. So again, there's like no vapor. You're not losing any of the volatile aromas or flavors. And it's once you get like a ratio that you like of however much water or added sugar or honey and any of those things, you can just repeat it every time and it's like perfectly consistent.
And then the product is sort of pasteurized, right?
Exactly.
So that it stays in good condition.
Keep it in the pouch, yep. Mm-hmm. You can keep it in the pouch until you need it. And I think it works really well for infusing liquors. It's just like a low enough temperature that you're not losing the flavor of the product itself, and it kind of marries together. So it's really nice.
And do you prefer what's the preferred method post sous viding? So David was talking before the commercial break that it has to be brought down to the right temperature. How is that done?
Well, we would always recommend if it is a fish or a meat, poultry, anything like that, we go through a staged chilling, three stages to be precise. So imagine you made a roast beef and you take it out of the oven and you slice it right away. Like all of the beautiful juices are coming out. The outside looks overcooked and the inside is like very rare. You have to think about the same way with sous vide. So you just give it a little time to kind of like
rest,
like soak back up those beautiful juices that it had kind of leached out during cooking and has been going in and out of the protein. And then slow cooling, start with tap water and then finish in ice water. And general rule of thumb is get it chilled to the correct temperature within 6 hours. But that first part where you're letting it kind of reabsorb its beautiful juices is pretty important.
But that you're talking about to store and use in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, otherwise you would just
use it. Yep. A lot of people do that at home. But we think that if you cook in batches in advance and let it chill and give it that opportunity to rest, if you will, it's really nice. It keeps it super juicy as well. So there's maybe a couple different schools of thought, but we usually would teach that in the classes.
Mm-hmm. And is part of Cuisine Solutions' goal to have the home cooked sous vide cook? Is that part of what you want, or you want it kept? Do you prefer that it stay at the restaurants and people buy your products? I mean, do you want people to learn how to sous vide?
Yeah, I mean, we have a whole magazine.
I know. I have the gorgeous magazine. David writes for it.
At home.
Mm-hmm. So I know you have this gorgeous facility. David, you've been to the facility. Mm-hmm. Is that something that the public sign up and get an education?
There are classes available through online mediums. That would really be the best way. There are other classes that you can take with Dr. Bruno Grosso himself.
Mm-hmm.
It really just depends on kind of the investment you want to put into it. I mean, we really believe that educating people on sous vide and just kind of almost democratizing that, because it makes it more tangible. It makes it something that anyone can do and experiment. We want to give them that. But at the same time, we also understand that food safety is really important. So if you're going to go down that route, we would encourage you to get an education and get a firm understanding behind it.
And they're easily accessible. We have the courses on lacrea.com in addition to the in-person courses that we do. So
just so people know, you're saying Crea, C-R-E-A.
Yeah, but with com. La in front, because we are also French. So lacrea.com.
lacrea.com. Okay.
And the fundamental courses are available online, and it touches everything from scientific theory to the basics. Like, here's how you treat steak. Here's how you treat chicken, et cetera, et cetera. And then after you finish that course, you can take it and go with it once you have the fundamentals down.
So, David, when you went out to the facility, what did you do out there?
Well, we cooked some dishes, and Bruno really kind of explained all of the processes behind it. I mean, it was pretty technical. It was a lot to take in, but we did prepare some. I forget what we prepared: a beef dish and mm-hmm. a chicken dish.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a lunch with all the several products that really showed the diversity of the use of sous vide. It was really fascinating. And then we had a cocktail session in the afternoon that was, as I recall, was really terrific. And I wanted to ask you about the smoking.
Sure.
Where you took a piece of charcoal and mm-hmm. put that in with the, was it bourbon?
So it was smoked maple wood that I charred over an open flame. And packed it with rye bourbon
mm-hmm.
and let that infuse sous vide at a low temperature. And it was the idea of taking what you would do if you were barrel aging a cocktail or a spirit.
So you're cheating. Sounds like you're cheating.
You're really short. Well, it really shortens the process.
Right. It's just a different way.
It's very cool.
The flavor is as if it were aged in a barrel. So, yeah. Because the barrels are charred on the inside, so rather than putting the liquor in the barrel, we're putting the barrel in the liquor.
And sitting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is this something that could be applied to, I mean, it could be applied to any spirit, really.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And what about, could it be applied to wine? I mean, is that possible?
Yeah, you could do like wine infusions for sure. Imagine like a sangria that, like, you know, mulling. You're done in an hour and, you know, you don't have to, the longer it kind of steeps, the better it is. And you just don't go at a temperature that, you know, you would boil it, because then you're kind of really changing the flavor profile.
Okay.
So yeah, you could definitely do infusions with that.
So the facility, is the facility more for the layperson, or is it really more for your science development, product development, and for chefs to come in and get trained?
All of the above.
All of the above. Okay.
Yeah. We're, you know, attached to the manufacturing plant, in our test kitchen is in Sterling. So we get visitors from well-known restaurants, you know, food manufacturing companies in other areas of the world. You know, we have a lot of guests come through, and we teach courses there as well.
Okay. And you're just opening in Thailand, aren't you?
Yes, we opened last year. So
we have two locations in Virginia, and one in Paris, and one in Thailand.
I think we need a field trip to the one in Paris. I'm pretty sure that's what we
or
need.
The one in Thailand. Okay, right on it.
Yeah. Oh, I would go to the one in Thailand, too. Yeah. Why Thailand?
I mean, to be more available to like any of our Asian or Middle East markets. Yeah, for sure.
Is that, I mean, I would assume for hotels that this is a
hotels,
concept
airlines.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
You know, for anybody who's doing large catering, or because if you think about all the bad weddings or bad charity events that we've been to, you know, with the dry salmon and the you know,
overcooked chicken,
like the rubber chicken, you would think that this would be the smartest way to get a good piece of protein onto the plate.
Yeah, it's a great solution for volume, you know, establishments for sure.
And are more and more facilities doing it?
Yes. Yes. Actually.
Yeah, especially the way the labor pool is going right now and all of the training that's required to, like, all right, here's how to cook to temperature.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
mm-hmm.
you know, chefs like to have that reliability, you know, based on the market at the moment and the turnover and things like that. It's just like, it's going to be perfect every time. We're sure of it. You know, it's a good solution for sure.
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about sous vide for the home cook. David, I know you've played around with it.
Mm-hmm.
What was your results?
Well,
or what was your? Let's talk about your process a little bit, and then we can talk about your results.
Although this was several years ago for the Post, I experimented with some home sous vide equipment, and even in those few years, it's kind of come a long way. Now, what's most popular is the kind of a stick that looks like an immersion blender, but it's a mm-hmm. circulator that you can really attach to any bowl or pot or in the kitchen, whereas some of the others were kind of included the basin that you had to cook in, and that kind
which
of
sounds really expensive,
kind of limited. Yeah, they were, I think they were like $300-$400, whereas mm-hmm. The circulator sticks are now maybe like $125 or in that range.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think we have, I personally think we have a way to go before sous vide is really kind of an everyday item in a kitchen, like a microwave or toaster oven or whatever. For one reason, you can only cook one thing at one temperature at a time. So if you need to cook things at two different temperatures, you can't do it at the same time.
Right.
And if something's taking 72 hours, then you know,
you got to be around for 72 right. hours.
And it does require a second form of cooking most of the time. You know, if you cook a piece of salmon, then you have to sear it. Well, salmon actually, you don't have to sear afterwards necessarily, but if you want the sear, you have to do it.
Right.
And a steak too, you have to sear it. If you sear it first and then put it in the bag, it doesn't have the sear quality mm-hmm. when it comes out of the bag. So you
for the texture.
Would have to do the sear afterwards to get the kind of hard crust on it. So there are so many things that are really excellent. The 63-degree egg is mm-hmm. amazing, a perfectly poached egg, and I think in particular root vegetables are amazing cooked sous vide. The flavor, carrots, rutabaga, turnips are just so
beets.
Intensified.
Yeah, beets
are really
amazing.
Really amazing. And as beets in particular, because they can be such a mess to cook.
Right.
You know, this method is just foolproof, and really the intensity of the flavor is unbelievable.
So since it is difficult to do at home, it's not super easy to do at home, you do have a ton of products that is available by retail. Mm-hmm. I have a freezer full of them at home. Can we talk about some of the other offerings that you have? Because one of the ones I was really interested by, I haven't tasted it yet, is the polenta.
Mm-hmm.
They're like little polenta cakes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like super ready for, again, another, like to me, for entertaining, this just seems so much easier than doing it all by myself.
Actually, holidays in general, I don't know how everyone else is, but when my family descends upon my house, it's just mass chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the fact that I can cook everything sous vide, and then no one has to be in the kitchen slaving over a stove, you know, the day of. I actually get to enjoy myself and spend time with my family. So, yeah, when you're entertaining, we have a lot of great products. We have the 72-hour, which you can actually cut into smaller cubes if you wanted to do, you know, just bites. The polenta cakes are fantastic because you can just throw them on a little griddle.
Mm-hmm.
You can even bread them and deep fry them. That's, if, you know, if you're not looking to be healthy, but it's great.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, diversity-wise, one of the other really fun ones that I like are the fava beans and the smoky fava beans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like a succotash, but kind of our version of it. And
okay.
You get like these beautiful, beautiful bright green lima beans because of the sous vide process. So it's not going to look mushy.
Right. It doesn't lose its color.
That's definitely a summer favorite of mine.
And what about you?
Oh man. I love our braised short ribs, not just the 72 hour, but the beer and red wine braised, because it's more of like a typical braise.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a soft polenta, so the polenta cakes, but the soft polenta, it's amazing. Like the texture, if you just reheat it in the water bath, it's mm-hmm. so good. We have a great like butter chicken. Like we get into other types of cuisine as well, like some that's Asian inspired, sometimes Indian. Even the paneer that we make is like spot on. I love it. It's like a really nice thing to be able to.
You get the paneer frozen?
Yes. Yeah.
Is it Palak paneer?
No. So actually the one AJ is referring to is actually the Shahi paneer.
Okay.
So it's one of, we dabble a lot in different varieties of cuisine and we always look for that authenticity. But, you know, there's actually, if you guys live in Arlington, your kids are going to be eating the paneer. Because
yeah, okay.
we're launching a program called Cafeteria, where we're using sous vide food products so that we can help give better nutrition to students on
in their schools.
Yeah, and paneer is actually one of them.
That so makes a like ton a
little,
of sense.
A little QSR, almost, so to speak, so a little quick service restaurant like a Chipotle or a Cava, if you're a local DC person, and you know you can just kind of run through. You get to choose between cuisine solutions, paneer or scrambled eggs, our ground beef, and like because it's all cooked sous vide.
And the antibiotic-free chicken.
Yeah, antibiotic-free chicken. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like a build-your-own-bowl concept. The kids love it.
And I bet.
We changed the flavor profile.
So are you going into schools?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the next step?
We are here. Yeah, we already are.
Okay.
We're already there. It's just, again, we are kind of, like I said earlier, we're the food that you've tried, but you didn't
they're
know.
Everywhere.
They're everywhere. Okay, I have one last question. Was there ever something that you tried to sous vide and you were like, no, that did not work. Not at all. Anybody? Come on, fess up. One thing?
I mean, I've had great failures, but it wasn't necessarily just based on a sous vide component.
Okay. You're going to take some personal responsibility for the problem.
I could just tell like a funny, like kind of mishap that a lot of chefs do is like, don't pack something when it's hot. How about that? Like don't vacuum pack it when it's hot. It can like explode, especially if a chamber machine.
Okay.
It's like one of the first things you learn if you're like a cook or a stagiaire, like do not let it get packed hot because it will come out of the bag. So yeah. Chill it down first.
What about you, David, when you were playing at home?
Oh, you can. Oh, well, so, you know, a lot of restaurants, you have to have a vacuum sealer at home to create these cryovac bags, but not all vacuum sealers are created equal, so the $100 one is much different than the $3,000 one.
Okay.
So if you try to compress something, it's very popular in restaurants now where you take like pieces of melon and compress it so that they get darker in color and all flavors concentrate and everything. At home on your $100 sealer, all the liquid will just come out and get all them through the bag and go all over the place and all.
That sounds beautiful. That sounds like fun.
It doesn't work at all.
Okay. All right. Well, first of all, I want to thank you all for joining me today. David, thank you for being a wonderful co-host.
My pleasure.
Mr. Nellis may be losing his job sometime soon. And I want to thank my guest today, Chef AJ and Chef Dell, joining us from Cuisine Solutions and for bringing all this beautiful food and the cocktails. It certainly was an education learning about sous vide cooking because it does... There is a mystery to it. A lot of people hear the term. Also, there's this beautiful magazine called Sous Vide. I assume it's available online, correct? Mm-hmm. Yes, we can get it online. And it's a beautiful magazine. As I mentioned earlier, David Hagedorn is a writer for it. And he does wonderful articles. So you should definitely check it out. If you are a major diner out there, you are eating sous vide cooked products, and you should definitely know more about what you're eating. So I want to thank my guests again for joining me. We are off air next week, but the following week, the Rhone Rangers are coming back in town. Ooh, we'll be drinking some red wine in studio from California. This is Nikki Nellis, Industry Night. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.